Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 286.
This week on the podcast, North and South Korea met in the middle to stare into each other's eyes and hold hands.
And the downside of approaching your female staffers about being a surrogate is that your district might lose a 16-point margin. So, you know, think twice.
Plus, Rand Paul always has 8 filibuster hours worth of convictions until he decides he doesn't have any convictions.
And Ronnie Jackson. Don't be that guy.
Teachers in 6 states are now demanding basic dignity. What will they think of next?
And nothing gets correspondents fired up like a woman telling jokes. Not even the actual news.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right.
And it's another episode with the very special guest being my mother, Carla Nordstrom.
My favorite.
Hi.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
We're obviously, as always, going to begin with an update on Puerto Rico.
That's right.
Because, as we told you last week, they suffered an island-wide blackout.
Right.
This week, the power is back on, but there's still 3% of the island with no power.
Really stuck at 97%.
We can't seem to move past that.
No, can't.
That obstacle.
And if we try, then bad things happen.
That's right.
That's
all we...
You try and clear a tree to get more power out to the...
You try to get to 2%.
And then the whole thing goes up in smoke.
So this has been reigniting a bit of a conversation around statehood for Puerto Rico, because this, more than anything, has really been a symbol of how we've been treating them like a colony. This is like a straight, like lord to colony kind of move.
Mm-hmm.
To be like, you don't need power that much.
Right.
And one thing that I don't think we had reported on because we'd been out was that 2 weeks ago, before the island-wide blackout, there was a half island blackout.
Sure.
As well. So
yeah.
Something more needs to be done about the infrastructure there.
Yeah.
More than just announcing that we've fixed yet another blackout in time for hurricane season when
right.
we can experience untold numbers of blackouts.
Yeah.
But the real news of the week, at least the end of the week, was the historic meeting between the presidents of North and South, or the
right.
the leader of North Korea
right,
and the president
and
of
president.
South Korea.
Right. Uh-huh.
So they met at the border
yep.
and engaged in one of the longest handshakes I've ever seen.
I know.
It was a photo op. It was an emotional moment. It was a 10-minute handshake during which they were holding hands for 10 minutes is what they were doing. They
yeah.
weren't shaking at a certain point. You can only shake so long. So instead, they were just two guys standing at a border holding
yeah.
hands and having a conversation.
God, can you imagine if Donald Trump would have been there at the
oh
same
my God.
Time?
Well, first of all, they couldn't have kept the handshake going for that long with Donald Trump because
one of them would have been
one of them
pulled
would have,
to the ground
exactly.
or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, they would have been wrestled to the ground.
Yeah.
But they, after the robust handshaking exercise, mm-hmm. They went and had a little Korean unification gathering where they agreed that they were going to end the war, finally.
Sure.
The war that was fought from 1950 to 1953.
Right, yeah.
Well, the war ended in the sense that
well, right.
no one's
it's
fighting
ended,
it.
But it's been for like 60-70 years.
But there was just, yeah, they've had no treaty.
Yeah.
And so they're going to sign a treaty. And this is the first time, actually, that Kim Jong-un had ever been to South Korea, which is where all the cookies are, which seems like a natural place to find him.
Well, we don't know what kind of cookies they have in North Korea.
I think we know.
Do we?
I think we know
great,
because
probably,
they
right?
were airdropping choco pies into North Korea and people
yeah.
were going for it.
Right.
I think that's a sign. And
they didn't
there
happen.
Are choco pies all over Asia. There are fake choco pies. I'm sure they have bootleg choco pies in North Korea.
Yeah, probably.
But they're not as good as the real thing. If there's anything I know about choco pies, is that nothing is as good as the real thing. But so this is all in the shadow of the planned meeting between Trump and
yes.
Kim Jong-un, because
uh-huh.
a lot of this is contingent upon what happens when he meets with Trump.
Yeah.
Because they were sort of, you know, they shared all of these grand plans, and they're
yeah.
going to get rid of all their nuclear arsenals.
Right.
They're
going to,
yes.
Basically,
like
immediately.
A year, yeah.
Yeah.
They're going to have a unified government of some sort, which sounds suspect. I think all of them think that they're going to be in charge of the unified government.
Probably, yes.
I think that sounds, because a unified government to like any international ears sounds like South Korea taking over North Korea. It doesn't sound like North Korea has
no.
anything to do with anything. And like, I know
no.
that Kim Jong-un didn't just agree to give up power.
No.
So
no,
I don't know what we were talking about here. But yeah, he said later, even on Sunday, that, or eyewitnesses said that in the discussion that Moon and Kim had, that Kim had said he was going to get rid of his nuclear arsenal as long as the U.S. agreed to formally end the Korean War. Now, I would argue that really we're the only ones left fighting it. So sure. In that sense, I can understand why he's waiting for our okay, because it's yeah. U.S. Army that's like at the border there.
Yeah.
Like the U.S. military has had a presence there this whole time. We have like yeah. warships there and shit. We're just like guarding South Korea for whatever cockamamie old reasons we drummed up that are allowing North Korea to be like, the imperialists are coming at all times.
Right. And, but, you know, it's... the reason that we're there is so that's why we're so nervous about them having nuclear weapons. I mean, yeah. besides the fact that we just don't want them to have them generally, but like right now, if they were going to attack us at any point, you know, there's been all this talk about ooh, whether it can get to Alaska or whether it can get wherever. It's like they were always just going to attack us in South Korea.
Right.
Basically.
Where we've been.
So, right. Which is yeah,
for all
right.
of the years since yeah. the quote end of the Korean War right. as we knew it.
Yes.
But so some skeptics have, argued that maybe we don't remember the other two times that sure. Korea they're agreed
on
to
their,
do this.
They're on their every 10-year plan.
Yeah, every 10 years.
Because they did it in the 90s and then they did it 10 years ago.
Yeah.
So they're, yeah.
Every 10 years, whoever's in charge of North Korea at the time, this is the first time it's been Kim Jong-un.
Right.
But Kim Jong-il.
But he knows the plan.
He knows the plan. He grew up with the plan.
Yeah.
His father and grandfather invented the plan. But they, you know, Kim Jong-il in 2008 said that they were also ready to end the Korean War and have a lasting peace and get rid of their nuclear arsenals and all of these things.
True.
And obviously didn't.
Yeah.
I think there the difference now is maybe just that who knew Donald Trump would be the president?
Sure.
Like, there's an added air of unpredictability, but they know how to play an unpredictable hand better than anyone.
Sure.
So I don't know what to think about what's going on. Mike Pompeo, our new Secretary of State, is not buying it. Or he was sure. buying it. John Bolton, our new
John
National
Bolton.
Security Advisor, is not buying it.
Yes.
And his mustache is definitely not buying
nope.
it. So we have a little bit of dissension in the ranks about how to deal with it,
sure.
because obviously...
But he's been wanting to just preemptively strike North Korea
well,
since
that's...
he knew
the
where
thing
it was.
Is, though, both of them have always wanted to do that. Well, the two of them share
yeah,
a love of
Yeah, but then Pompeo went
strikes.
There and realized
yeah,
that he, how great of a time
yeah,
it was.
Yeah, well, he loves a dictator as much as the next person, I think.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But so there's no timeline for dismantling these nuclear facilities that they're so eager to get rid
yeah.
of. They said that they would let people come in and monitor, but they didn't explain what any details
sure.
of that plan would be either. And all of it's apparently pending the U.S. doing something, which might turn out to be an impossible task.
Sure.
Because
yeah.
the U.S. doesn't know what it's doing right now. That's
no.
some advice from us in the U.S.
No.
to the
but
world.
Trump was really excited about it, though.
Oh, yeah.
On
well,
Twitter.
He took
anyway.
Personal credit for it.
Yeah.
The most important thing that I learned out of all of this, whether or not peace is lasting or even starts,
yeah.
is that North Korea is in a different time zone than South Korea by 30
this
minutes.
Is so good.
North Korea is literally operating 30 minutes behind South Korea. I don't know why they didn't decide to take 30 minutes before. As
right.
would be, I think, if you
yeah.
wanted to argue you were the best.
Right.
Taking
be
30 minutes
future.
Before. Being the, be 30 minutes into the future.
yeah.
They are literally 30 minutes in the past for all of the region. Because it's not just South Korea that's in that time zone. That whole time zone.
Really?
North Korea is just, yeah, South Korea is in agreement with world time. They're in the time zone that the world has
well,
assigned
Oh, right, 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 yes. Oh, I thought you
North,
said it wasn't. It's only North Korea.
It's only North Korea.
Yes, right.
North
yes,
Korea
yes,
is
yes.
the Arizona of Korea.
right.
They have
yes.
just arbiarbitrarily decided to
yeah, to some t- yeah,
to
right.
be in their own to be in their own time. And because of that, at the DMZ, there are apparently clocks with North Korean time and South Korean time.
But unlike Arizona, at least they're probably always in the same time zone.
Yeah, they probably don't do some crazy thing where half of Arizona is in a
right.
different time zone than everyone
or,
else.
Or they don't do
daylight savings.
They don't do daylight savings.
But I think
so
only
sometimes
some of
it's
it.
The same time.
Yeah,
as
exactly.
it is here. Because when my parents lived there, I never knew what time it was.
No, of course not.
Is
you can't
possible
know.
To know.
Yeah, it's
yeah.
different at different times of the year. It's a different time difference.
Yeah.
But yeah. So if we teach you nothing about the Koreas from this moment on,
right.
let it
be that.
Let it be known that North Korea chose its own time zone, and it
yeah.
chose a 30-minute increment for whatever reason.
Of course it did.
It's the most amazing news.
Yeah.
Here stateside, we had some exciting special election news.
Yeah.
There was that Arizona special election to get to cover Trent Frank's seat. You might remember him as the Republican representative who had approached female staffers about being surrogates
yeah.
for
yeah.
him.
There have been, you know, we've had a lot of special elections, and a lot of them were just
been
because
for funny
people.
Reasons.
I don't know. A lot of them have just been because somebody, you know, got a job in the administration or
okay.
this or that. You know, but like we've had a few that, like, I think it's important to remember were because they were for either terrible
yeah.
or, you know, there was that one guy who was forcing his wife to have an abortion or something. Right. Like, didn't we have that one recently within the last year or whatever?
Yeah.
And then now we've got this one. I mean, like these are not just for normal reasons to be having an election.
These are people who don't know how to act right, is right. what it is.
Yeah.
So this is one of those. It was a Republican state senator, Debbie Lesko, running against Haral Tippermany. I've never been able to figure out how to say this name. Sure. Also, he didn't win, so whatever.
Yeah.
But on the Democratic side, Lesko was heavily favored to win. This is a district that Trump won by 21 points, that Romney won by 25 points, that McCain won by 22 points.
Right. And Franks had been winning, I think, by more than
100
that,
points. Yeah. Which, Lesko did win, but only by 5 points.
Yeah.
Which means there was a 16-point swing.
Ooh boy.
Since 2016 in that district.
Yeah.
This is a heavily GOP district, obviously, based on the consistency with which they've been voting GOP. But we're about to go into a special election in August in Ohio, which is another district that is where the Republicans are favored to win, but not even by as big a margin, I don't believe.
Yeah.
And so we're looking at some not so great results when you consider the math for a midterm style election where everyone has to run.
Yeah.
Yeah, in New York, we had special elections last Tuesday as well.
Oh, yeah.
And although the candidates in upstate New York that we were really, hoping would win, they lost by 200 votes as opposed to, the candidates they ran against. Because they were open seats. But in those districts, the Republicans either were unchallenged or won by 70%.
Right.
And they did pick up one assembly seat on Long Island. So it really was not good news at all for the Republicans. It wasn't as bad as they hoped because these are the Republican areas, but it was a whole different.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you're talking about 14, 16-point swings like we've been seeing in these special elections, that's all well and good for Republicans who won by 20 points in those districts, but there are plenty of districts where the Republicans won by under 10.
Right.
And those districts, you can't win in a 16-point swing situation.
No. Well, and not only that, in each of these special elections that we've had here, we've been reading a lot about how much money the RNC has been funneling into all of these special elections out of panic.
Yeah.
And you can do that when you've got a special election coming up, once every 6 months, basically.
Right.
But you can't in 2018, when every single congressional seat is you can't be spending millions of dollars on a plus 21 Trump race in Arizona, unless you have $1 trillion, squirreled away somewhere.
Yeah. A part of that, though, is the Democrats have to run candidates in every single district.
Right. Yes. Which they don't do.
They don't do that.
Yeah.
Or if they do, they, like what happened in 2006 was not running Democrats in every Republican district. They ran candidates, but they were blue dog Democrats.
Right.
So they were very conservative and they really mucked up the works when Obamacare came along.
Yeah.
So they have to, and that's a part of the battle that's happening right now.
Totally.
Right. Yeah. Well, and in Ohio, in the 12th, where they're having this special election in August, they have a primary going on for next month, and there are 17 candidates running for this seat.
Yeah.
So there is a lot of movement towards trying to work out how you find candidates in this new brave new world that we're in. The DNC is usually doing it wrong.
Yep.
As we're generally reminded.
Well, because, there's a good article on it in The Intercept about it. What the Democrats do is they, when somebody goes to the DCCC, which is the Democratic Congressional Committee, their first question is, how can you raise $250,000?
Right, it's how many rich people do you know, basically.
Yeah, just with your from your phone.
Yeah.
And that's, in these districts, in like the district that I'm in, which is one of those districts, there are no media markets in our district, so the media costs are not going to be as huge as they would be in a district which has a media market. And it also, that's not necessarily going to work because there's so many people involved. There are like over 100 groups that have formed since Trump was elected, progressive groups. And they're the ones who are going to go out.
Well, yeah, and especially in a congressional district, you're talking about a 700,000 person area.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That is a lot of people, but it's not so many people that grassroots groups can't go out and make contact with most of those people, especially who are likely to vote Democratic.
We've seen that.
Exactly.
Yeah. In some of the special elections that the Democrats have won or even flipped this many points, and I would assume that we'll right. probably start seeing that kind of reporting come out of this Arizona district. But
yeah.
it's been that, and the same in the Alabama Senate race. Right. That exactly. was an entire yeah. state. But you yeah. saw all of these
people go out and tell their neighbors to vote
that have just been formed within the last year, and it work, it's coordinating with each other too, mm-hmm. which is a new thing
Democrats that Democrats are getting up to.
And that is what I think, and that is what also I think is scaring Republicans too, just because yeah. like it's the feeling within a district more than it is the amount of money that's coming into
oh,
it.
Oh, right. But also these groups have been working on this in our district on the congressional race for over a year
yeah,
now.
Right, exactly.
A lot of them ran now, candidates in the last
yeah,
one.
And yeah, we're a huge district. Our district is the size of Delaware and Connecticut.
And it's heavily
combined,
gerrymandered.
Heavily gerrymandered. But the thing is that we're now getting to know each other. I mean, right. we're in contact with... you know, with other people within the district.
Well, my mother yeah. also, especially because her and my dad are running a website, as I think we've mentioned on the podcast, yeah. that is basically summarizing all the votes that happen in the district and describing all the districts inside the district, like the state level districts,
yeah.
so that there's like an information resource for the district about what actually is contained within the district, what the issues are, how your representatives are voting currently, and also how much money it costs to run in these races, yeah. which yeah. is all information that's very hard to get. But it's all public, you know.
Yeah.
It's just hard to sort through. So it's right. it's a resource that would be and good for other probably, districts as well.
Prior to you doing this website, I'm assuming it was probably all in a million different places too.
Oh yeah,
right.
yeah,
yeah,
there,
yeah,
there
yeah,
was
yeah.
not one place you could go.
Right, exactly.
To,
yeah, but it's a good idea for really any district, and especially yeah. a heavily gerrymandered district that's shaped funny and can, you know yeah. pulls in communities
right.
that are not really connected and stuff like that. It's such a good idea because it allows you to kind of have a central source of information for who's actually there.
Yeah.
Right, and then also you create a person who actually knows
right.
all of this.
Yeah,
stuff.
You're now the walking yeah. expert.
Right, the person right. that goes out yeah. and collects all that information becomes very knowledgeable about
exactly
yeah.
the district.
Yeah, and so it's a good idea.
Yeah.
Something to consider in your own district if you're computer savvy or you just are retired.
It's called seedsofdemocracy.org.
Right. Yes. Exactly. Yeah, check out what they've done. And if you improve upon it, let us know because
absolutely.
We're always looking to do that.
Yeah.
So in any case, that was the special election news. We're going to keep an eye on Ohio. This week was really the week of cabinet shenanigans.
Oh, boy.
There were so many exciting cabinet stories.
Yeah.
With so many exciting twists and turns.
Yeah.
We begin with the Pompeo hearing, which...
yeah, we were so excited because, you know, we told you last week on the podcast that, you know, Rand Paul was thinking about voting no.
Standing up for his convictions.
He was going to be the, you know, this Pompeo might have to go to the full Senate with, you know, out being approved by the, you know, whatever.
Oh, the committee.
The committee yeah. that would, and you know, and only one person ever in history.
Foreign policy, but, and I don't care. Yeah. Yeah.
But anyway, of course, Rand Paul, you know, only had that idea for so long.
Rand Paul is great if he has 8 hours of dead time to fill
right.
with his convictions.
Right. Right.
And but he
just,
doesn't have any convictions when it
yeah.
comes to voting.
Right. If he wants, yeah, if he's able to keep people up all night, then he's here for it.
Exactly.
But otherwise.
If that thing that he was keeping everyone up all night, though, comes to a vote.
Right.
He'll vote the opposite of how he said he would vote. No problem.
Right. Yeah.
But also, it's one of the problems with Congress right now. None of them can be trusted to do the right
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, or even stand up for their own convictions.
Right, like, right. And that's not just a Republican thing. That's also a Democratic
yeah.
thing.
Seven yeah. Democrats also voted to confirm
oh,
Pompeo.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
obviously nobody can be
42.
Trusted. Yeah.
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 So that's our way of telling you that Pompeo has been confirmed and is currently our Secretary of State.
There you go.
The vote was 57-42, as we yep. said. Seven Democrats joined all the Republicans. And he got sworn in by Alito, which is fitting as usual.
Ugh.
Yeah. And is now on his first trip to go attend a NATO summit and then visit Saudi Arabia, our best friends.
Sure.
Then Israel, our
of
second
course,
best friends.
Right.
And then Jordan to, I guess, gallivant about, you know,
well, I mean,
lord
obviously
over how he just met
big,
to meet with Israel.
His big thing that he's going to obviously, like, try and make happen here is because it's been his big thing forever. Is
right.
He hates this Iran deal more than anything. So,
more,
of
yeah.
course,
yeah.
I mean, Israel, he has to go to.
Well,
and
obviously.
And just the region in general. But, I mean, like, that's because that's also coming up to where that needs to be renewed, I believe.
Mm. Yeah, it has to be renewed.
It was a deal where it had to be renewed to renew itself to start
right,
being.
Yeah.
It was one of those meetings where it was one of those deals where they were going to push the deal down the line by agreeing to make
yeah.
a deal.
Yeah.
But I'm assuming that's why he's going
yeah.
over
also,
to that that region first.
Because maybe he's taking over from Kushner.
And yeah, maybe he's going to bring peace to the Middle East.
Maybe he's going to bring peace to the Middle East.
No one better qualified than Mike Pompeo to bring peace to the Middle East.
Yeah.
So we have that going on in the State Department. Scott Pruitt had to testify before two House committees because if you have not been following the Scott Pruitt story.
I can't believe he hasn't resigned, guys.
It is
resigned. He should be fired.
Well, he should be fired. He should be fired. But I just... He's going to be fired, or he's going to be
disgraced.
Yes,
he's
exactly.
He's disgraced.
Currently, he's disgraced. Yeah.
If you haven't been following, there's a lot of details. He's done a lot of shit. He apparently obsessively believes in his own need for expensive security.
Yeah.
In many ways, he has to fly first class or private. He has to, you know, have special locks, biometric locks on the EPA in case. They bought all these weapons too. Like they might be in a shootout, like an EPA shootout. But the thing that has really been pissing everyone off is the $43,000 privacy booth that he installed so that he could make secret phone calls that were more secret than the EPA's own secure line phone calls. Why he needs special secrecy beyond what other EPA administrators have needed is a question we're all asking. Why $43,000 was necessary to spend on such said privacy booth? Because I'm also going to point out that it doesn't cost $43,000 to get a privacy booth.
Sure.
You can get one for a few thousand dollars. You can stick it in the middle of a room and no one can hear you.
Yeah.
He needed a special built-in privacy booth
to
make special private phone calls that where he was doing God knows what, probably ordering more security and weapons for himself. And then the other controversy more recently is that he told Fox News earlier this month that he had not authorized his chief of staff to give pay increases to a bunch of EPA staff. And it turned out he did.
He did.
So he's lying on all counts.
Yeah.
He doesn't know what he's done. He doesn't know what he thinks. He doesn't know what he's done.
No, but he does know. He did. I believe he was the one who this week admitted that he only talked to lobbyists who gave him money.
Oh, yes. I forgot about that.
They were only one. You know, he'd kind of talk to constituents, but if a lobbyist didn't give him money, he'd
not interested.
Well, and I assumed that, because I even think I said this last week, I was like, I would assume that the reason that he needed that phone booth is because he's basically just doing the bidding of all of the oil and gas people and talk to lobbyists, you know, to get rid of, you know, any sort of EPA rules, which I think they announced some more this week.
He's been very effective for the Trump administration. Yes,
gotten rid of a lot of regulations.
He's been terrible for the country and for the world.
Exactly.
And also for himself. Because doesn't end well. I don't know
this will not end.
I know, right?
Go back to banking or whatever. Like, get out of here.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Become a lobbyist yourself.
Yes. That's obviously what your plan has been this whole time.
Then you can fly first class.
No. From what I've heard, his plan is to run for senator from Oklahoma.
Oh, boy.
Oh, my God.
And that's what he's
prepping himself.
On.
He's working on that in his secret phone booth.
I guess.
Oh, boy.
He's going to have all those teachers to deal with down there.
I know. Man. We're going to talk about that in a bit. But I don't think that the next few years is going to be the right time for a disgraced Trump official who needed a special phone booth to roll back all of the environmental regulations.
Now. I mean, the people of Oklahoma will have forgotten about that in 2 years. I mean, let's not kid ourselves.
But he needs to quit.
Yeah.
He can't sit in there and go. He can't allow himself to testify
in
front
Trump
of everyone.
Well, hasn't even sort of...
Yeah, he started backing away.
Half distanced himself from him.
Yeah, except Trump has he has two problems. One is that... For his way of thinking, Pruitt has been very effective.
Right, exactly. Right.
The other one is there's no one to replace him.
Right.
You know, Trump is
Well, and they've got
the
so many
now.
Other problems. Yeah. I mean, with other cabinet officials leaving, and he's got a, you know, and he's keeps sending people over to the Senate that are completely half-baked, you know, because we're going to get to another one soon. And that's here's the thing. The Senate usually, whether we like the person politically or not, like, these cabinet members serve at the pleasure of the president, as we always say. And so, you know, we might not like the person that the president picks, and in many cases in this administration, we don't.
Right.
But you sort of, the Senate will usually just approve someone if they are sort of qualified, even if you don't like their politics, because that's just what they're supposed to be doing. But the Trump administration has sent them so many people for these cabinet-level positions who are just so inept blatantly unqualified that it's made it hard. It's made their jobs hard, regardless of whether they're Democrats or Republicans, because they're sort of like...
Well,
Because even the Republicans didn't. There were Republicans that had reservations about this Ronny Jackson nomination because they were like, he is crazy unqualified. Like, he might also be a good enough doctor, but it's like, he can't run the...
It was for the VA, which is something that is a concern to their constituents.
Well, right, yeah.
Exactly. So this was that we're... Okay, well, let's just dive into Ronny Jackson. Yeah, I mean, sure. We got there.
Yeah.
Lots of exciting drama with that pick this week.
Oh, boy.
On Wednesday, the Democratic staff of the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee released a 2-page document that listed a shit ton of allegations against Ronny Jackson based on the testimony of 23 current and former colleagues of his. In this document, he is accused of creating a toxic work environment and loosely prescribing medications to whoever.
I was
going
to say, giving out pills to anybody who's...
But most importantly, for being repeatedly drunk on the job.
At work.
There are stories of aides finding him passed out while he needed to attend to the president on a foreign trip.
I would contend that maybe he was drunk when he said that the president, if he had a better diet, would live until he was 200.
I would contend that, based on my understanding of science, that he would have had to have been. As a medical doctor, doesn't track.
Sound right, no.
Yeah. Uh-uh. He once apparently crashed a government vehicle while drunk, in fact.
Yeah.
And had also been filling prescriptions for himself on the job. And also, prescribed somebody in the White House military office so much Percocet that his own staff panicked because they couldn't find the amount of Percocet. In any case, here are some things people described him as. Quote, the most unethical person I've ever worked with. Quote, despicable, dishonest, explosive, and prone to, quote, screaming fits. So he sounds like a joy. And like someone who should definitely run the whole VA. But in any case, there were so many accusations that his hearing was postponed indefinitely because no one knew what to do.
Yeah. And again, this was sort of like Trump, like, not pulling his name, but saying, like, if I were him, I would just, you know, these senators aren't going to leave him alone. So if I were him, I would just pull my name out, which was sort of like Trump's
way. My mother
way
has
of, like,
an explosive conspiracy theory about
this. Yeah, no, I have a conspiracy theory about this. And I am prone to conspiracy theories. But that there was clearly a leaker. And they keep referring to this guy who had the job before Jackson even started, which doesn't make sense at all. I wonder if the leaker was, John Miller or John Barron, a.k.a. Donald Trump.
Oh, yes. John Miller and John Barron being the names he would use to call the New York Post to provide gossip to Page Six about himself.
Yeah.
For anyone who didn't catch that reference.
Right.
Interesting.
Yeah, my mom's explosive conspiracy theory is that these leaks actually came from Trump.
Well,
because most of the leaks do come from Trump.
The White House is the biggest leaker of all the leaks.
Yeah.
But
do you think it was because? Do you think those leaks came because it seemed like he may not get confirmed anyway? Because Republicans were already voicing a lot of concern that he was just unqualified prior to the fact that he was drinking on the job.
And they do, for that particular job, they do like there to be qualified people because it comes back on them,
of course,
with a vengeance when things
and
don't work
we
at the VA.
Like it or not, we certainly don't like it. You know, it's veterans who, unfortunately, vote more Republican than they do otherwise.
Yeah,
and there's exceptions, but just... Right.
But that was the problem with Shulkin. He was good at the job. He did that silly, you know, that crazy stuff with Wimbledon and all of that. But he really was making headway in so far as improving the VA.
Yeah.
And so now, if they bring in somebody who,
it's gonna look like, and for context, the White House Medical Unit, which was what he managed, has 60 employees. The VA has 370,000.
Right.
It's the second largest bureaucracy in the entire government,
right,
and it has a budget of $200 billion. It's a huge deal.
Yeah.
And there's 9 million veterans that it treats. Like there's no world in which this guy, whose qualification was that he has good personal chemistry with Donald Trump,
right,
seemed like the right guy. And I have my own conspiracy theory to go off of my mother's conspiracy theory, because while we're talking conspiracy theories, which is, I think that if Trump did leak this, that it was probably related to a petty personal reason that had nothing to do with anything.
Oh,
I bet Ronny Jackson's head got too big when he got nominated and then Trump was mad about it or something.
Or it could have been, at least, if it wasn't Trump, I certainly buy that just because he's a known leaker. But I would also buy that it was
in the White House.
It was somebody either in the White House or certainly somebody somebody high up on the Republican side.
I actually think that that sounds like the most plausible thing.
They didn't want to have to deal with this nomination.
They don't want to put themselves through having to vote on this.
Right.
Yeah. And it's possible that Trump came up with the idea because this guy is telegenic. And so he thought, oh, he'll be great on television. He'll be do a good job. And it may be also that he was too telegenic.
Well, Trump does hate it when people are too telegenic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He likes telegenic people, but only if they're not as telegenic as him.
Right.
That's right.
Right. But so in any case, the reason we can have so many conspiracy theories about all of this is because all we know is that Jackson denied all the claims and then pulled his...
And then Trump got really mad at John Tester.
And then Trump felt that John Tester was to blame for all of this.
This is the second week in a row we talked about John Tester, by the way.
By the way, John Tester, who's probably
his name
never
I
been mentioned...
out of my ass last week.
No one's ever mentioned John Tester, aside from last week on this podcast, in history. He's one of the least mentioned senators, I feel like.
Yeah.
But so, this is during Trump's epic and infamous phone call to Fox and Friends, which we are going to get to after I just mentioned that, according to NBC, the front runner now for the post... is Jeff Miller, the Republican from Florida, who was the head of the House Veterans Affairs Committee from 2011 to 2017. That's who they think might be called upon to replace. But who knows what Trump is going to do? You never. This is what a reasonable president might do.
Sure.
Appoint kind of an asshole, but who at least has like a vague qualification.
Right.
But like,
exactly.
We can't know that that's what Trump will do.
But am I right? Because I overheard a conversation you were having today that Ronny Jackson is leaving as his doctor also.
Yes, so I believe he's staying. He's still in the White House medical unit, but he is not going to be the personal physician to the president anymore. So Ronny Jackson really lost out big time on all of this. He was the personal physician for both Bush and Obama.
Yeah.
So I mean, he was at least doing that.
Yeah. And but your I heard you give your idea of who you think should replace him.
Oh yeah, Trump's personal doctor. The guy who initially said that he was in the greatest house of all time.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Who wrote that crazy letter to...
Yes.
Yeah.
That guy is very telegenic. And not at all.
He's crazy looking.
He's crazy looking. He's very compelling, though.
Yeah.
You know? He makes for great television. He gets good ratings, is the point.
It is.
Yeah. But so in any case, speaking of good ratings, Trump called into Fox and Friends this week and just unloaded one of the most exciting rants in recent memory.
Yeah, he had like a 30-minute meltdown.
Yeah.
Like, to the point where... It was them that cut him off.
He almost
ultimately
made it look like they were doing some actual journalism on that show, which is a challenge in and of itself.
Yeah.
And an impressive feat.
Steve Doocy has never done that ever.
He's never had to fact check anyone in his life, and yet here he was. He offered, I believe, up to 2 fact checks, which is really a record for him. First topic that we should mention is the most important, which is, did Trump admit that he didn't get his wife a gift for her birthday?
Sounds like he did.
It's
yeah.
Apparently.
Did you see that Brigitte Macron said that she was trapped in the White House?
Yes.
No.
Melania Trump was trapped in the White House.
That's amazing. Uh-huh. And also a very accurate depiction of what's going on.
I know.
But so in any case, apparently there's some dissension over whether or not Trump actually got Melania a birthday present the year that she gave birth to Barron, and also he was screwing porn stars in various hotel rooms. Uh-huh. So her birthday is the same week that yet another porn star that's not even Stormy Daniels says that he offered to pay her to have sex with him in his hotel room. It's also the week after Melania gave birth to Barron.
Yeah.
He claims that he got her a card and flowers. So everything's probably fine.
Sure.
But there's still questions about whether or not there was enough gifting going on.
Yeah.
Now, next up was a recap of his time with the French president and his wife. As you'll note, he was very impressed the last time they met with the fitness of Emmanuel Macron's wife, Brigitte.
Oh, yes.
She's an older... She's older than Macron.
Yes, she's cougar.
And apparently Trump didn't expect her to be as fit as she turned out to be and chose to comment on that, as you would never in a situation like this.
Yeah.
But he said that he had swayed Macron on how bad a deal the Iran deal was. Because you know about the Palace of Cash.
Oh, yeah, sure.
You know, the Palace of Cash, which is a story that isn't true... is a very compelling evidence that the Iran deal is a bad deal.
Yeah.
And apparently, Macron now on board. Now, I would argue that probably according to Macron himself,
he's not on board. Yeah.
But he has been good at being a Trump whisperer.
He had. Well, yeah, but I have a feeling...
He doesn't get anything out of it. I don't know.
No, he doesn't. And he is probably... I can see him being like the type of person who just sort of is like... is just like... kind of half agrees to sort of like just move on because he's not trying to continue but listening to him.
Didn't he also the next day go to Congress and he talk did. About both the Iran deal and the climate deal?
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, he sort of like went and sort of like tore like all of Trumpism to shreds in front of Congress the very next day. Yeah.
But Trump didn't watch that speech, obviously. So then there were questions about Ronny Jackson. Does he acknowledge that he wasn't fit for the job? Should we be checking into people's backgrounds before we tap them for leading huge federal agencies? The answer is no.
No.
He ranted about John Tester and the obstructionist Democrats.
Yeah. Said, not fair.
Yeah.
I think that was a tweet, maybe. Or maybe it was in this interview. I can't remember. But he was saying.
I would believe it was in both or either. Yeah.
But I love that's what he said, though.
Yeah. Well, it's just. It's, not fair, it's so Tester. Unfair when somebody just does some vetting of a person that is supposed to lead the second largest federal agency. Mm-hmm. That's they should have warned him that they were going to do that so he could have said, please don't. You know?
Yeah.
But he also said, and this is my favorite comment, that the VA is so big that how can anyone have enough experience to lead it? So why not pick a guy with no experience? How can anyone be ready to lead the VA?
Right.
How can we find anyone who's qualified?
Well, what he's really looking for is someone who will privatize it. Like, that's the reason that he got rid of Shulkin.
Yeah, because he was trying to actually lead the VA.
Because at a certain point, he really liked Shulkin, too. Yeah. Thought he was doing a bang-up job.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Joked that he would never have to say, you're fired.
Right.
To him.
Now, unfortunately, didn't quite turn out the way that he had guessed. He also went on a rant about Diamond and Silk, who were really all over the news this week. Oh, God.
Yeah, they had a...
Diamond and Silk...
Lied their way through a congressional hearing this week.
Which had no purpose other than, I think, to entertain us. Like, I'm not clear on what we accomplished in their congressional testimony.
Well, I think that they had claimed... I think there were some, like, campaign finance issues,
well, it was about whether or not they had...
They had not been paid by him. Right. But obviously, they... quick check showed that they had.
They had been paid money that they were claiming was for travel expenses and not payment for their appearance. And so there was a question about whether that was actually work for the campaign or whether it was like sort of an in-kind thing or, you know, whatever it was.
Yeah.
But they gave some very entertaining testimony that whether or not it served a purpose was a delight for all of us to watch.
Yeah.
But so we should just read. This is a quote that Esquire pulled because it was so funny about Diamond and Silk. And I think we should just read it because how could we possibly sum up what he said otherwise? Diamond and Silk are warriors, by the way. How about Diamond and Silk? They've become amazing. They started off like somebody was talking about them on the internet, and there were all these two women, these two beautiful, wonderful women. And I said, well, let me check it out. It took me about 2 seconds to say, stardom. It's incredible. So, Diamond and Silk. These are all warriors. We have great people in the Republican Party. And I think that in one way, it's showing how bad, how obstructionist these Democrats are. It's a disgrace what's happened.
What?
Couldn't tell you what that means. But what I know is that he saw Diamond and Silk and said, stardom.
Stardom. Yes.
Then Steve Doocy presented an opportunity for Trump to slam Comey.
Oh, sure.
So he went for it, obviously. Yep. Said that he had been smearing him with fake facts and leaks.
Yep.
And then I believe Doocy was then forced to fact check Trump because he was claiming that Comey was leaking classified information, which has turned out to not be true.
Yeah.
And then he went on a rant about Moscow.
Sure.
Because Comey says that Trump says he wasn't ever in Moscow for the peeing on hookers incident.
Right.
However, there are hotel records that say that
he
was.
Yes, he was there over, I was going to say, he was there longer than he ever claimed.
So it turns out that
was around
the Golden Showers,
or something like that, right?
Golden Showers could have happened.
That's right.
And
we're really finding out that all of these salacious bits from the Steele dossier are just the more we go here, the more
everything's true in the Steele dossier.
Right.
We don't have to fact check it anymore because it's not, even if it's not factually true, it's meaningfully true. You know,
yes.
Everything's true. The Steele dossier is correct. Everything that they say happened in some way.
Yeah.
We don't need of course the Golden Showers happened. You don't have to prove that it happened. We know. We all can feel that it happened. but that somehow turned into a rant about CNN and giving Hillary Clinton questions before the debate. And then Brian Kilmeade even
tried to stop
the rant. It was crazy.
He really has his talking points.
Yeah, and he finds a way to get them
in. He hasn't updated them in a while.
No.
But he has them.
He has them.
They're there. Because didn't he still talk about how much he won the election by it?
He ended on a brief rant about Cohen. And then about how much he won the election by. He won his electoral college outstanding victory.
Yeah.
Massive victory, Brent.
But, you know, the thing about the Michael Cohen and this whole Stormy Daniels thing is that he has been – here's the thing. He's an idiot, is
thanks for sharing that.
The biggest part of his problem here. But he, whenever he does one of these interviews like this, he always says something that he unwittingly shouldn't have.
Yes.
You know, and the thing with the with Cohen here was that he talked about how very little Cohen ever did for him, because he's trying to distance himself from Cohen now at this point. But the problem is that if he's basically claiming that Cohen barely ever did anything for him once, then he also no longer has attorney-client privilege.
Right.
And so Stormy Daniels' lawyer, as soon as this interview was over, was like,
we did it.
Jackpot.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
We got it. Yeah. Like, yeah. He's basically claiming that Michael Cohen isn't his lawyer.
And Stormy Daniels' lawyer, by the way, is waiting behind and literally, like, physically behind and mentally just waiting in the wings in every moment of Trump's waking life.
Yeah.
Like, he is just hovering, waiting for moments.
Yeah.
And he's catching them.
Yeah.
Both in real life, and we're going to have a funny story where you're going to have to look up the picture yourself, but we're going to tell you about it later. But also, like, he's just sitting in the wings waiting for Donald Trump to say something that makes his case, which is a case that isn't even about the real thing that it's about, more viable. You know, they're suing Donald Trump about a thing that isn't even the thing that they're really suing him about.
Well, right.
It's all on a technicality about him not signing the NDA or whatever. Like, this isn't what the case is actually about. It's about whether or not Michael Cohen made an $130,000 campaign contribution against the law. That's not what they're suing him about. But they are just waiting for any little moment that makes their dinky little case more respectable, because that will blow open the whole rest of it.
Well, you know, it's kind of like the thing with silk and diamond with them.
It is diamond and silk.
Diamond and silk. It was ridiculous, whatever their names are. But they're there, you know, running their mouths in this committee about the fact that they didn't, that money was for transportation costs.
Yeah.
But the way it was reported to the FEC was that it was for consulting, field consulting.
Yeah.
So somebody there is lying.
Right. So either them or the campaign.
Yeah, if it's not them, then the campaign lied about it. So, and you're not supposed to go to Congress and lie in that way. That's a crime.
Yeah. Well, and the thing that they don't understand, and I'm sure that they probably do have their own lawyers, but, like, the thing that I feel like they need to understand before you just show up and, like, start telling congressional committees things is that these congressional committees have lawyers that are just, like, working day and night, basically, like, behind the scenes and basically telling these Congress people, like, what to act like. They know how to easily trap you into saying that you're not that you weren't supposed to say.
They know how to get you to say the thing that they brought you there to say.
Yes. Right, exactly.
And the only way that you can get out of doing that is if it's truly not true.
Right.
You know, like, you can go and tell the truth. And if the truth, if they're trying to trap you for something that isn't actually the truth, this happens a lot when Republicans try to trap, like, you know, Cecile Richards on, on the stand, or Hillary Clinton. which was a nightmare for them.
Right.
But if it is true, they can figure out how to get you to say it.
Yeah.
They're not, they literally do this for a living.
That's
but
right.
with this thing with the, with Cohen, it's gotten so peculiar that
somebody's
probably a lot of people are going to end up, you know, having all these problems for things that they don't see as such a big deal. I mean, Cohen can go to jail for like 15 years for lying to, on the FEC form. I mean, you know, it's like,
These are all things that they were just sort of like, oh, it's no big deal, we'll just cover up. But it's no big deal until a lawyer who's ready to nail you can find the details.
Yeah.
In any case, so that was an exciting interview. If you haven't at least watched highlights from it, then it's worth it, I think, just for the Fox and Friends facial expressions, because they even look legitimately exasperated by what's going on at a certain point. And they are literally reporting nonsense all day. Like, they have literally nothing going on. So for them to be exasperated is a lot.
Yeah.
Moving on, teacher strikes are spreading. It is getting so exciting, you guys. There are now 6 states where strikes are happening or have happened.
That the photographs from the Arizona one were just like mind-boggling, too. I mean, holy cow.
Well, that's how I felt when West Virginia went, too, where I was like, this is, and these are states where they don't have a tremendously powerful union situation going on. These are states, or in some of these cases, in Georgia, it's school bus drivers, and they don't even have a union. they organized a strike without a union, which just goes to show you. This is what I've been reminding unions all week. Because I'm really angry at unions for not making me a member of them. Unions are there to serve a function. A lot of unions have sort of taken on this corporate model where they're not really providing a service to their members as much as they are sort of enriching their own power base.
Yep.
And their pockets.
And their pockets, as always. The thing about unions, though, is people don't need them to organize. So it's helpful if you have a union that is actually there to do your bidding. It's a very powerful thing to have.
Yeah.
When you have a union that is actually representing the interests of its members, more or less, I mean, all of them have their own politics, but like when you have a union that's actually doing the work, it's a huge asset.
Yeah.
When you don't have a union that's doing the work, though, people are still capable of striking without a union. They're capable of taking mass action without a union. Yeah. They are capable of organizing themselves. And so if you whittle away union rights in states like West Virginia and like Kentucky, you know, states where we have seen a rollback in the presence of unions and the power of unions for years now.
Right.
That doesn't mean that people aren't able to organize when it comes down to it. And you shouldn't expect that you're solving a problem.
And I don't want to diminish sort of like the job and the what can be the power of a union.
Right.
But also, to a degree, is it more powerful to have tens of thousands of teachers show up, you know, in mass at the Capitol building?
Well,
or is it more powerful to have, like, the union leaders go and represent them? I mean, like, this is obviously, like...
This is very grassroots, and it's a powerful image.
If I were a legislator here, I'm far more scared that all of these teachers have showed up on my doorstep than I am their union leader
The union leaders are there to stop this from happening. So you go, you talk to the union leaders so that you don't have to have this visual on your doorstep.
Right.
Yeah. So if you cut out the middleman, if you say, well, we're not going to give any, you know, leverage, we're not going to provide any negotiating power to these unions, we're not going to give these leaders the ability to negotiate with us on in a fair way, then you have cut out the one thing that protects you from looking like an idiot.
Yeah.
Yeah, and also for the unions and the union leaders, when unions were formed, the union leader was first
somebody who'd done the job.
Did the job, worked for the same salary. Oftentimes, they paid them less, so they were really hungry when they went into negotiating. But the way these unions work now, for instance, with the teachers' union, like in New York City, the head of the teachers' union makes like $200,000 or $300,000 a year. Whereas teachers at the very top make like $100,000 a year. And they say, oh, well, we have to make that much because that's what all the other presidents of unions make. So they've really kidded themselves about what their jobs are and what and how, you know, and it used to be the only union leader in New York City who got the same salary as the workers was the head of the fire department's union, the firefighters union.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean you don't pay the expenses. It doesn't mean they can't live, you know, comfortably.
But if you're making three times more what the teacher is, then you can't have the feeling, you can't have the same feeling that they have. When you go home, I mean, you should be able to have some empathy, but you can't.
Also, especially if you've never taught before.
Well, I was going to say
that
at the AFD.
Yes,
if you make the job of union leader a professional job that is separate from the career that they are representing, then you also, you know, because if you suddenly are paying $200,000, $300,000 a year, you want something for that money. Suddenly you want to hire a lawyer to do the job. Suddenly, you know, you have someone who has no experience in the classroom doing the job or whatever, because that's what the head of the AFT, the situation with the head of the AFT is, who used to be the head of the
But she taught. But she taught as the counsel for the union. I mean, she was a protected worker, unlike the rest of us.
But that's when So when you have a sort of a career path inside the union that is that distinct from that of the workers in the union, then what you have is a sort of corporate structure in the union, and that doesn't really work.
They were proud. I mean, I once brought this up with the old union leader, Sandy Feldman, and I said, you know, with her people,
you might imagine
I was a leader of the teachers union. And by the way. When I did this, I'd become a chapter leader, but I had just written an op-ed piece, which was published in the New York Times, about why the teachers rejected the previous contract. So I you know, so it didn't matter what I said. They wouldn't stand me anyway. But the thing was that they just said, oh, no, we have to be like all the other unions. We have to be corporate. That's the way. That's the way this works.
But so in any case, what happens when you have that mentality as unions and when you let legislators roll back the rights of unions, what you end up with is mass protests that are union-like, but without the sort of ability to point fingers at a professional union that's, without the sort of scapegoat. Yeah. Instead, you just have teachers who are pissed in your business
face. And in your face. The state capitol.
And then another part of it, I think, which is really important, which has happened with all of these states, is that the teachers, being teachers, are very concerned about their students.
So they
haven't just walked out and left the students high and dry. They've been, in some cases, in West Virginia, they arranged for food for the kids. They made arrangements for the kids so that nobody could criticize them because it wasn't that they just...
Well, and I think what's so... The thing that I kind of thought to myself while this was going on, because I don't think even I had realized how little teachers in a lot of these states were being paid.
Oh, yeah.
I know a lot about New York City teachers because my mother was a New York City teacher. I have friends who are New York City teachers.
Sure.
Because my mom was a school teacher in Iowa.
You know, I mean, she didn't make a ton, but also the cost of living in Iowa was, she was making enough to feed the family. We had good schools there, and it was because the teachers could eat, but in places they can't.
I hadn't realized that, but... I feel like what has been so kind of mind-blowing to me about this in as we see how devalued teachers became in a lot of these states, and I think they're devalued everywhere, but they're really devalued in a state where they're making $25,000
a year. $30,000 a year, exactly.
Not only are not replaceable by scabs, you can't just hire a bunch of scabs. It's not like FedEx workers where they'll hire a bunch of scabs and be like, see, we didn't need you anyway, which is rude. They shouldn't do that. And obviously the mail doesn't get there when they do that. But... With teachers that have master's degrees, they are trained. And not only that, they are taking care of the kids in your society. So parents don't want them to just hire any rando to be a teacher.
Right.
So teachers really, in these states, have a kind of leverage that I don't think anyone has given them credit for because they were undervaluing them so egregiously that it was almost like everyone was like, no one cares about teachers, so don't even bother. But teachers are serving... Not just a, you know, they're not just educating our youth or whatever. They are also serving a position where they're allowing people to go to work. They're allowing other people to do their jobs because some kids need to go somewhere during the day. So
there's another part of it that I think is the reason why this is happening right now. And that is that there were for a number of years there, they expected that technology would take over from teachers. And they would just put kids in front of computers and they wouldn't need teachers. Ten years ago.
Well, we just had a huge issue here with the LA public school where they spent
$1 zillion on iPads for everyone.
It was a huge debacle. I mean, we had a turnover like with the superintendent because it was like such a huge situation. But I think that was in part due to, I think, the idea that you're talking about where we were just sort of like, all right, we'll
fire teachers and put everyone in front of an iPad.
Yeah. And so I think that finally the teachers realized that's never going to happen.
It can't possibly happen.
And because of that, I think they're feeling a little more, they're feeling their power more than they did for a while there. Yeah. And,
there are so many.
And they're young and they're just, they're.
Well, this is one of those things where like already teachers are only really devalued because it's seen as a female profession.
Right.
So, there are other jobs that also are very important to the functioning of a society. Garbage men, for example, sanitation workers.
Sure. Right.
They get paid a lot of money because their job sucks and they provide an extremely important service to society. Right. But teachers also provide an important public service that is beyond just their qualification as people that can teach your kids because they sort of allow the rest of society to function during the day because the kids have somewhere to go. So there are so many levels on which they have leverage because these shutdowns shut down a lot of these places entirely. There were not only were the schools closed, but other things ended up having to close because parents had nowhere to bring their kids they were out. So it was, in any case, let's tell everyone what states it's happening in. We talked about West Virginia and Arizona already on the podcast, but since then there's been strikes in Kentucky, in Georgia, in Colorado, and now North Carolina is next in line.
Yeah.
So here's what's been happening in all of those states. in Kentucky, they were having a pension situation because the Kentucky teachers learned that the legislature secretly amended a bill about sewer systems to create a two-tiered system in their for their pension plan. Like, they snuck pension reform into a sewer bill. Sure. And so they had sick outs. They closed schools in like a dozen places. They like thousands of them showed up at the Capitol. It was, they had a bit of a backlash because it's Kentucky. But they did end up seeing more, like they did end up with more money for the schools at the end of it. The problem is that they financed it by imposing a regressive tax. Kentucky.
Sure.
But now 46 educators are running for state legislature there.
Oh,
so.
Wow. Nice. Good.
They
And the nice thing about teachers running for office is they can speak before crowds.
Yes, that's true.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Literally
they
do
have
that.
The hardest audience there is.
And right. And they can explain things.
Right. Yes. Exactly. In Colorado, teachers shut 10 of the largest school districts and picketed on the 26th and 27th, so just earlier this week, because they're another pension issue. Everyone's trying to screw teachers out of their pension plans.
Yeah.
And also, their union said that teacher salaries adjusted for inflation have actually dropped 17% in the last 15 years.
Right, sounds right.
So, and also, they have a constitutional amendment there that requires that education funding keep up with inflation, and they have not been abiding by it. So there was that as well. Two Republican state senators responded by proposing a bill that would send teachers to jail for 6 months for striking. But as you would. I think one of the more exciting things, though, is what happened in Georgia. In DeKalb County, this was not a teacher strike, but this was bus drivers who struck shut 10 of the largest school districts down in the process. This is a job that was not unionized, where a majority of the workers are African American and were paid much worse than striking, you know, than teachers.
Sure.
They don't have any sick leave. They didn't have any retirement plan. They weren't treated very well.
Yeah.
And they organized a drivers and monitors advisory committee and struck. And for like 3 days or 2 days or something like that. Their ringleaders, that's the official term, got fired. And some of them got put in prison. So that was a sad end.
That's what happens when it's mainly black men who are.
Yeah.
Well, that too.
Yeah. But this, I think, is exciting just because it shows that this fervor is starting to make people have dreams, you know?
Yeah.
I feel like if this is a non-union position with no benefits, and about half of them participated, which is for a non-union strike
a pretty big deal. Yeah.
So,
and you know, many of these issues, just to put it in perspective, are the same issues that the Memphis sanitation workers were fighting for 50 years ago when Martin Luther King was assassinated.
Yeah.
It's the same thing basically.
Yeah. Georgia. Tennessee. The South. Everywhere, actually, though, because it's happening everywhere. But so in North Carolina, on May 16th, teachers are planning to take personal days to go demonstrate at the Capitol because they want raises. Teacher pay there is $10,000 below the national average.
Come on.
But
I'm surprised in North Carolina, too, because, like, that's they sort of pride themselves on sort
being
of
medium reasonable.
They have a ton of universities and they have sort of like the tech corridor there
totally,
or whatever they call it or whatever. Like
schizophrenic state because you know they also they have
I'm sure they also
that,
have a,
but then they were the ones that had all of those issues
with the transgender bathroom bills.
And then they had the governor who was the Republican governor
and then tried to
prevent the Democratic
governor from being seated.
There's a lot of drama in North Carolina.
Yeah, North Carolina.
It's an exciting state.
Moral Mondays are North Carolina, Reverend Barber, who every Monday they would go to the Capitol. People would go to the Capitol to demonstrate because things were so bad there as far as the government was concerned.
Oh. Yikes. North Carolina. And soon, striking teachers as well. May 16th. Check social media or whatever people do. Look for the pictures. And then, in final news, the White House Correspondents' Dinner happened this week. And because the president doesn't speak anymore, all we can do is really dissect the comedian who gives a sort of does like a stand-up routine.
Yep.
The media seemed really angry that Michelle Wolf, who was the host, decided to do jokes there. I couldn't tell like what everyone was so worked up about.
I know, because
that's she took everyone on. It wasn't like she, it wasn't a partisan thing. She was mad at everybody, as she should have been.
Right.
That's what the White House Correspondents' Center is. The that's whole thing is supposed to be a roast of themselves. Roast.
And roasts are mean. Yeah. Like, that's the thing. Right. That's what you do. You beep, you go, and you're mean to everyone.
Yeah.
Go back and find any of the previous ones, and because it's like, you know, it's like you mentioned, it's sort of like apparently like a woman is not supposed to go up.
Right.
And like,
well, and you can't
really
win
mean.
With those anyway, because remember Hasan Minhaj did it.
Yeah.
Larry Wilmore did it. None of them got any kind of great shakes.
Yeah.
But Larry Wilmore did it when Barack Obama was the president. And so at that point, it didn't matter what he said because everyone was there to hear Obama.
But they also criticized him terribly for it. And what they did last year with Hasan Minhaj was terrible. And now it's a woman, so they're doing the same with her.
Yeah.
I think any comedian who goes and does that is off their, you know, is crazy. Because it's, I mean, yeah, there's a lot of publicity.
Yeah.
A lot of people know who Michelle Wolf is now, who didn't know who she was.
Yeah.
But it still is,
I bet
I'm not
that
sure
this
it's worth it.
Is worth it for her because she established the kind of political cred that she probably, with the kind of people that she probably is hoping will pay money to see her in real life, who now probably know who she is.
Yeah.
That's true.
And she has a big special coming out.
Yeah, and she has a special coming out, and she ended her speech by reminding us that Flint has no water.
Yeah. And I thought she was...
I thought she was funny.
I thought she was funny, too. I didn't see the whole thing, but, I mean, I saw a couple of her, like, good zingers, and they were
We watched
really
it this
funny.
Morning, and we laughed.
Yeah.
We were doing laughing.
Yeah.
We did laughter, you know? Meanwhile, maybe funnier even than the speech is this hilarious video from CNN of the red carpet for one of the galas around the... it was the First Amendment gala or one of those.
Yeah, sure.
Where Kellyanne Conway is being interviewed. And Michael Avenatti, Stormy Daniels' lawyer, just appears behind her and just starts making faces into the camera. It's so funny. It's and it so goes good. On so much longer than you're imagining it will go on. It's just, like, too amazing.
God. That's amazing.
And she, like, does... It takes her too long to realize it's happening.
Yeah.
Like, much too long.
Okay.
Yeah, well, and they... It was clear a woman had walked up to him to get him off of there.
Yeah.
But
it
didn't work.
He couldn't be.
And she was not happy all night either.
Right.
Kellyanne Conway. In the few cutaways. I mean, she, because she was one of the.
Sarah Sanders.
She was one of the roastees. Kellyanne
Which
Conway.
Which is like, don't attend if you can't handle being roasted.
You
it's
have
the
to.
Fucking correspondence.
Here's the thing.
There.
If you go to one of those, you have to know that there's a chance that that might happen. And you have to be prepared that whatever is said about you,
you, gotta smile and
you
laugh.
Have to smile and laugh, even if it's, in Kellyanne Conway's instance, maybe the insinuation that she should be killed by a tree.
Right.
And so, like, you still, you have
stuck
to go and you have
tree.
To laugh.
Yeah, she wasn't supposed to be killed. She was supposed to be stuck.
She was supposed to be stuck. I know. But, I'm sure that that's what her brain was telling her.
Doesn't matter.
But, like, does it, you have, yes, you
she
have
walked
to,
into a roast.
You have to at least smirk.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
you can't be the, you know, angry,
they are
you know,
such wet blankets.
I know. They are.
They are.
Yeah.
They're terrible.
They're so mean,
yeah.
and they're also, they can't handle, they can't handle
because
return
the
fire.
Because also the Sarah Sanders one was not even,
yes.
that wasn't even that bad. Like, if I was Kellyanne Conway, I'm maybe sitting there and I'm being like, all right, well, like, really, she wants me to be, like, stuck under a tree. Like,
right.
okay, great. But, like, Sarah Sanders, like, the job of the... Sarah Sanders' job, and everyone knows it, is to go out there and lie for the president and for the administration. That's what that person does.
Right.
Or give half-truths or sort of, like, not answer
spin.
Questions fully. Like, it's a spin job.
Yeah.
So, like, to insinuate that sometimes she lies out there should not have been so disheartening
especially
to her.
Especially when she's been,
like,
caught in the middle of numerous lies.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
The facts point.
And she also was basically sort of given a sideways compliment about her makeup at the same time. So hers... She really needs to check herself like, be able to, like, smile and take a joke. Like,
but
I'm going to give Kellyanne Conway a pass, even though I shouldn't, because she's awful.
Yeah, don't give Kellyanne Conway a pass.
But in
Kellyanne
of the two of them, I'm just saying, of the two of them, like, Sarah Sanders,
Kellyanne
like, really
Conway
needs to, like, get a hold of
invented the term alternative facts.
Right, it's true.
Just
right.
keep that in your mind while you're busy feeling. It's a classic Brent move to feel bad.
No, I don't feel bad for her at all. But I'm just saying, like, you know, the two of them were, like, the two that were pissed. And I'm like... Like, I can see where she's pissed, but Sarah Sanders is like, okay, like, you're the White House press secretary and somebody insinuate that you lie sometimes. Like, that's like, sorry about your life.
Yeah, but she's brought that to a whole new level.
Oh,
people
I know.
People never looked at the press secretary as a liar.
Well, that's true.
Well, that's
yeah.
true.
You know, yeah. so but I they were always a spinner, though. Like, I mean,
spinner,
I feel like
yeah.
if you're going to make fun of that person, it's yeah. probably for
spin.
For spin.
Yeah.
So it's like,
yeah.
You know, you can't get mad at that.
No.
Like, you just
Well, that's
can't
her
be.
Job. Also, she lies.
Well,
she does it.
She does.
So what do we need her nonsense for? In any case, Trump tried to plan counter-programming by having a Michigan rally.
Nope.
Where he said he tried to think of the most fantastical thing he could think of, and so he said he was going to shut down the government for a wall.
Right, which he said a million times.
Which
so
he
that
threatens
wasn't
all the time. So that. It didn't manage to break into the correspondence coverage as much as I think he had hoped.
Yeah.
Well,
the
also, the
today
timing.
Were not...
Yeah, the timing was wrong because he had to do it so much earlier
right.
than he, you know, because...
The Correspondence Center was at night, and he was in Michigan. And
right,
yeah.
and to
his,
have a rally.
Also,
his
rally attendees are
They're
roughly
older.
300
They're,
years old,
yeah.
so
yeah.
it's not...
Yeah.
Oh, but boy. In any case, that's the news this week.
Yeah.
Next week, we'll have more of it, I guess. It never seems to stop.
Nope, it doesn't.
But uh-uh. thanks for being here.
Well,
yeah.
thank you so much for
uh-huh.
having me. This
and
fun.
If you want to check out Seeds of Democracy... It's just seedsofdemocracy.com, so it won't be hard for you to find.
.org.
I mean, .org. It won't be hard for you to find. And if you do something similar in your own district, which you should,
yeah.
then email us and let us know.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because that would be a great resource for everyone.
Yeah.
And we'll talk to you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.